Hey everybody, and welcome to the Raw Rundown. Do you hear that? Do you hear that I loudly said welcome to the Raw Rundown and there was no spike in the audio? That is because your friend Kenny is sporting the blue Yeti stereo microphone. Let me just read you actually what it says on the box, which has just been unboxed because I just remembered that I had it. It is the ultimate professional USB microphone. So I want to thank all of you who have who've signed up on Patreon for this, because without you, I would have had to pay for this out of my own pocket. But because of Patreon, I don't. But also, the lesson is, I'm with David J. McCutcheon, my co-host, as always. Hi, David.
Hello, Kenny. Am David J. McCutcheon. I promised Andrew Bartley that I would do a spooky introduction, because we were supposed to film yesterday on Halloween, and we didn't. But that doesn't matter, because as you well know, Kenny, in my household, it's Halloween 24/7, 365. When you look like me, you terrorize everybody you come into contact with.
Now, see, sometimes I think you do that joke to beat me to the joke, because you knew that's where I would go.
It's not so much to beat you to the joke, Kenny. I've looked like this my whole life, and you're not the first one to make that joke. So I take away the ammunition
before you can fire it. I didn't make a joke.
You were going to. You know good so-and-so. I know what you were doing.
You can go onto our social media. You can go onto my social media, KennyMC1985 on Twitter, and you can also go to the Facebook community and type...
Phone calls! Who is it? Wait.
Fuck off. Thing is, in all the history of Media Inside the Ropes, has that ever gone off?
So it's usually my phone that's going off.
It's usually yours. How unprofessional.
The social media, yeah.
You can go on the fan community right, and you can see the video evidence of how David and I first met. Now, funny story behind this. So we knew that this was going to be the first time, obviously. And
I had no idea I was being filmed, by the way.
And I obviously knew that he would, as you see when you watch the footage, he becomes happier knowing he's being filmed, which says a lot, but
yes.
We'll not get into it. But so I just said to Corey, because Corey, our tech guy, was there, and he was doing all this video stuff, and I was like, just shut up the camera, we may as well. And David comes in, and he spends about 10 seconds... you know, to say hi to his good friend that he talks to every week, that I would like to think was a beacon of hope for him through his heart days.
By the way, out of the hospital 1 year ago today.
Woo!
Yeah.
Congratulations. We at Inside the Ropes are very, very understanding. David had 1 week off.
Of course. I took 2 days off from my day job.
Your day job.
Out of heart surgery, back into the frying pan, yeah.
But you can see the video of David. So David spends 10 seconds sort of saying hi to me and then spots the camera. So instead, he just basically shoves me aside.
Yeah, yeah. Old news.
Like a prostitute chucks a client by when the clock's done. And yeah. Immediately just starts beaconing to camera. And just like, ladies and gentlemen, you guys, and then just does this whole George Carlin bit that he wants to do. And it literally ends with me having to say to Corey, 2 minutes in, you need to cut this or he will keep going. And I was right, wasn't I?
Kenny,
you kept that
Kenny,
up as
Kenny,
long as I...
Kenny, can I ask you a question, though?
Sure.
Who is more important to Inside the Ropes? You... are our lovely listeners.
In what sense?
Would Inside the Ropes still exist without all of those who are listening at home right now? Or on the bus, out in public transport right now?
In the bath?
None of this would even exist without those lovely people that I was trying to entertain, Kenny.
I know what you're trying to do. I was trying to do
a public service.
You're trying to take the piss out of my heartfelt speech I did in the Bantercast. I know exactly what you're doing. I showed one moment of weakness. We'll get to that in a minute. Don't you fucking worry. Anyway, so this microphone, which was expensive, but you know, absolutely worth it because, you know, as people pointed out, it should sound clear. So... there are four settings with infinite possibilities. Let's hear what they are. The Yeti is one of the most advanced and versatile multi-pattern USB microphones available anywhere. Combining three capsules and four different pattern settings, the Yeti is the ultimate tool for creating amazing recordings directly to your computer, delivering exceptional sound and performance. The Yeti can capture anything with a clarity and ease unheard of in a USB microphone.
So hold on, Kenny. Hold on one second. You're speaking my kink right now. Let me unzip my pants. There we go. All right, I'm good. Let's do this.
You actually found a zip to unzip.
Yeah.
You do commit to that. I'll give you that. And also, Andrew Bartley, thank you for making me have to sit through his fucking horrible fake Russian accent. you Irish prick. But to get me back though, so you know, I obviously used some of our Patreon stuff to obviously up the quality and all that. But so on Patreon you can also pledge $50 for a podcast of your choosing. Various people have done that. We've done podcasts on ECW One Night Stand from 2005. David and I have watched WrestleMania 21 and SummerSlam 2006. Sandra and I have talked about NXT.
Should we tell people about some of the stuff that's coming up too?
Sure, yeah. So David and Sandra are recording a Fave 5 on moments that would get someone into wrestling. What would make people want to get involved if they don't know anything about it? What would you show them? Five things you would show someone. And it can't be your cock, so David obviously had to scratch one out and come up with another one.
Of course.
And so that's coming. David and I are going to be recording one on the career of Rey Mysterio. We're also going to do one on a Fave 5 on title reigns. Robert and I are doing one on Shawn Michaels and Chris Jericho. David and Robert are doing something very cool. I don't know if we want to talk about yet, but, you know, we'll leave that in the ether. But so you can do this $50 thing, and it's, you know, we will do, within, like, we'll do any topic that you want us to cover, as long as we haven't covered it already, and also, like, you can't tell us how to think about something. So you can't be like, Kenny has to spend an hour enjoying gender, unless I lose a bet, and well, we know how that turns out. the joke was on me, though, because Mark Rennie, I'm going to fucking out Mark Rennie right now, right? Mark Rennie, that fucking cunt, 6 months ago, right, he was like, I'm going to pledge $50 for you to do a podcast on this, right? And I said to Sandra, I was like, Sandra, we need to do that podcast for Mark Rennie. And she was like, no, Kenny, his payment declined.
Oh!
So that motherfucker comes in here, wants a $50 podcast, and then his payment declines. I understand $50 is a lot of money, and trust me, I do not know why you give us $50, but I'm very happy that you do. But Mark came back. He re-ammoed his wallet, and he came back with $50, and he was very clear about what he wanted. He wanted David and me to do a banter podcast where we just shoot the shit about anything, and he asked if I would be drunk. And we did a podcast, I can't remember what it was, I don't know if you can, David, but we did a podcast where I'd come back from a night out and I was quite drunk. At some point.
I cannot remember. It may have been a rundown, even.
I think it was a rundown.
You're drunk so often, Kenny. It's very hard to keep up.
So basically, I kind of took it as this challenge where I was like, well, you know, if this guy's paying $50, that's so much. That's like a lot of money, and he's not really. It's not like he wants us to talk about a topic. He just wants us to banter. You know, and we were recording it on a Friday night, so I was like, well, you know, with time difference, I'm recording it with David at like midnight. I'm catching up with some friends anyway, so I could just kind of get a little bit drunk. So I go out and I buy vodkas, doubles, shots of tequila, Sambuca, and all that, and I come home and I do this absolute abortion of a podcast, which I can't.
It was rough. It was rough, you guys. And you guys loved it.
I cannot listen to it. I don't. People are tweeting me stuff, and I don't even remember doing it. Apparently, I sang China's theme tune. I have no idea what happened. David did a saxophone. I don't. I couldn't. I have no idea. But anyway, and then someone pointed this out to me yesterday. They were like, I was explaining what I'd done, and they were like, "So how much did the guy pay? $50. But how much did you pay for alcohol?" About $75 fucking dollars. I lost money doing that.
Oh, good stuff.
It wasn't even like I didn't make anything. I actually lost money because I've got to pay David out of it. I've got to pay for the alcohol. There's none left for me. I'm in the red now.
And you got a hell of a hangover the next day out of it.
And the next day I had to go and be I had to go to a makeup studio to be dressed up as Pennywise the Clown. I almost vomited into a bag of Haribo. It was horrendous. I looked like a bag of shite.
You'd be the Pennywise at the Halloween party that's basically just like hungover and just pukes everywhere, and it's just like, ah, oh, this guy can't hold his liquor. It's like, no, you don't understand. I was holding too much of it.
I kid you not. I literally went over a speed bump and almost burst into tears. A bump on the road, and I almost cried. I don't cry at funerals, but I cry at a speed bump. So that was that experience. But anyway,
I do have a quick, wonderful restaurant story, Kevin.
Of course. Is this gonna top the guy who came in while you were on your cheat day? And what was it? He started screaming at the waitress or something. The one you told me too long ago. The guy threatened to shoot somebody, or he was screaming at somebody. What was that one again?
Oh, God, I can't even remember that.
You were eating, like, cheesy garlic bread or something. Oh, no, no. He came in with a pizza box.
Oh, that motherfucker. That'll never be topped. That will never be topped. That was while I was in L.A. working E3 for GameSpot. Yeah, that will never be topped in a million years. Because that guy was literally crazy. But this is a pretty damn entertaining story. So I will occasionally, about once a week, go to a Mexican restaurant. I will get chicken enchiladas, no cheese. I will adhere to not eating any tortilla chips, or sometimes I may indulge if it's a cheat day.
You don't
eat it. Right. Exactly. But all in all, not the worst meal that you could have. You know, flour tortillas, grilled chicken that's shredded up, some verde sauce on top. Not the worst meal to have. So
that to me sounds like me in my healthiest week of my life.
Exactly. So you know, that's like my once a week, I want something good to eat, but it's not a cheat meal, right? So, but occasionally you got to get the queso dip and get some chips too, right? That's like the once a month treat. But so with this though, I sit down and I'm about halfway done eating my meal and this family comes in. And it is a mother, a father, and a grandmother and the child. They don't look that bad. You know, sometimes you look at people and you just immediately go, oh, white trash, this is going to be hilarious. You know, there's going to be some fun story out of it.
Say like number one was like a trailer park family that have teeth missing. And number 10 was like the Kardashians. Where are they in the scale?
Well, I mean, the Kardashians might be closer to the teeth missing people, but you know, but in terms of you know, the bourgeoisie and the trailer park folk, I would say that these people were probably like a 5 or a 6, you know, like right in between. Nothing, you know, you don't see them and immediately go, that's going to be a problem. But so they come in and the younger woman, not even the mother, turns to the waiter at this Mexican joint. And you know, you've been into a Mexican restaurant before, Kenny. They always play the same song, right? It always sounds like the same song. Mexican restaurants have like 3 songs that they just repeat and tell everybody it's a different song.
It just
sounds
like if Trump actually built a wall and you go over it, this is the music you would hear on the other side.
It's like a very cliche type of environment. Right. Exactly.
That's really racist. I didn't mean that. That's not. I'm just saying it is
like the stereotypical like Donald Trump thing though, right? So they come in and the younger woman, not even the older woman, turns to our waiter and goes, yeah, what's this song about?
Right. As if he selected it.
As if he selected it. And he's an Hispanic dude, but he goes, I don't know. I don't speak the language. Like, you know, he's looking at her like, you racist bitch. just so presumptuous, right? And she just looks like baffled. Like, well, how, and she didn't say it, but you could tell by the look on her face. Well, how do you work here if you don't speak the language? You know, just the most racist, like that's what we call like oblivious racism. they don't know they're being racist, but holy shit, they're being racist, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I'm just sitting there, and my mouth just, like, fell open. And whenever he comes back, whenever the, it's a different guy. It's the guy who brings the chips. And he can barely speak English. It's like the inverse, right? Guy brings the chips, and she goes, pardon me, what's this song about?
Oh, for fuck's sake.
I'm like, you're doing it, you're gonna do it to everybody here on staff? Like, what the fuck? And he just looks at her like, okay? You know, he has no clue. No clue what she's even talking about, right? And so he just walks away, and I think he brings her an extra water because he's just like, I don't know what she wants, but I'm just going to give her whatever I can find to shut her off.
Yeah, I'll just give her a water. She'll be fine.
Right. Exactly. And so everything's going along swimmingly, but I'm just like, oh, man, that was a hell of a moment. Out of nowhere, their child, it's this little girl, I guess she's about 4 years old. The little girl slinks out of the booth. You know, she was like at the very end, but she gets under the table and starts crawling around. Parents do not realize this. This is like at 3 p.m. on a Monday, right? So it's not even like, you know, no one's at this place, right? It's just me and them practically. And they somehow don't notice that their child went missing under the table. The child, Kenny, is on the ground fucking crawling from one end of the restaurant to the other with their face on the floor, their tongue sticking out, mopping the fucking floor with their
tongue.
Fuck
off. You're making that up.
No. That was fucking happening. And I'm just sitting there and like, I'm like fucking dumbfounded. At this point, I'm just staring at this like, what the fuck did I step into? And like, I should have grabbed my phone and sent it to World Star Hip Hop or something, Kenny.
Now I know why Randy Orton lives in the suburbs. If this is
what goes on, this is the suburbs, Kenny.
Oh, this is where he lives.
I live in the suburbs. So that was my restaurant experience. Finally, the grandmother goes, oh, Calamity's over there, whatever the fuck the kid's name is. You know how these people name their children these days. Yeah. Calamity Jane, she's over there. Oh, Calamity, come over here, sweetheart. And then the kid just like hops up and runs back over. Meanwhile, there's a fucking huge wet mark from her tongue sticking out, licking the dirty fucking floor. I'm like, can you please go get the fucking do not slip sign and put it where she licked? I might fucking fall down. For fuck's sake, Kenny.
I hope that you've all heard that story right before dinner to prepare you for that.
You know the kids going around kissing the parents?
Oh, God, no. Do you know, like, I'm not a very OCD person when it comes to, like, you know, like, some people who are, like, really bad, but, like, don't eat the nuts out of a bowl in a bar. I'm like, come on.
Yeah.
You've eaten a McDonald's. You've practically ate spunk in a burger with chicken, you know.
No, like, exactly. I will share straws. I don't care.
Oh, yeah. I'm happy.
I'm the guy that if I'm drinking alcohol, I'm like, try this shit. I want to try yours. Yeah,
I do draw the line if I know that something has been, like, if there's something disgusting, I've seen it take place, and then I have to, like, touch it afterwards. Like, I can't do that.
Or if you got a friend who has just the nastiest mouth on the planet, you're not going to share a drink with them, you know? Three teeth and all the cavities and everything. No, not doing that.
No. So
you have to draw the line somewhere.
You do have to draw the line somewhere. That's true.
Even me, I have standards. They're very low, but I do have them.
You have some semblance of a standard. I'll give you that.
Right.
So, I mean, I feel like I should share a story as well, since we're doing one for each. So, so I am moving into a new apartment, flat, whatever you come from, the word applies. And because truth be told, like, when I do these podcasts and stuff, I don't want to have to tell my roommates to, like, can you just not, like, make your dinner for 2 hours while I podcast, et cetera, et cetera. So I went and saw this, like, really amazing little cottage in a really kind of little secluded area that's like 5 minutes away from the West End area that I really like. And then the guy offered it to me on the spot. And I was like, this is amazing. This is, like, so good. And I have to pay, like, I have to basically, like, pay up in the place I'm in till the 15th. But I've had to pay from today in a new place, because the guy wanted it to be rented from the first. And it was, like, It's such a one-off. It's like a little cottage at the back of a house with a nice like garden pathway. It looks really cool. So, and it's perfectly sized for one person. So I thought, right, okay, so I'm probably going to be in this place till like November 15th. I'll set up my broadband now to you know, so that it's all sorted by the time I get in the 15th. That's 2 weeks. You'd think that was okay. Now, I remember Robert. Yeah. I remember Robert telling me he had some issues with BT and their broadband. So in the UK,
oh, yeah.
In the UK, there's basically two providers. There's BT and there's Virgin Media. Now, the kind of broadband that BT use, there are like five or six other providers who do it as well, like Sky and different things, but it's all through the same engineers. So there's no point in trying to go to one of the other ones. You know, if you go to BT, you're going to all the other ones. It's the same engineers, but Virgin Media are the only one that are completely different. So Virgin Media are not available in the area that I'm going to be in. So it has to be BT. So I'm on the phone. So I go online and I like go through and I'm like, okay, I'm going to, you know, pick BT. I'm going to pick the fiber broadband. So it's like really fast. So that like if we start doing like, you know, a group of us on a Skype call, it'll handle it better, et cetera, et cetera. And I get to the page where I select the appointment date. They've got one on the 9th of November. I'm like, that's brilliant. I'll be, you know, great. And then when I click the 9th, I click continue and it says BT technical error. We cannot select an appointment for you. Please complete your order and one of our customer service team will select an appointment for you. But the problem that I have is that like so my schedule's kind of all over the place. Like on Friday I'm away to Aberdeen, next week I'm away to Manchester, then I'm away to London. Like I'm always away a couple of times a month, so it's hard for me to be like, just pick a date and I'll be there. Like right. It's harder for me to do that. So I thought, right, I'll just call up BT. You know, the 9th was available, so if it's the 13th, 14th, 15th, that's fine. So I go through to BT and I speak to this young guy, Isaac, who is on the phone and we're chatting away. And like, you can tell, he's not saying it, but he must be under one of these like things where like, you can't leave a 10-second silence with a customer. So Isaac's right, like trying to, right. Isaac's all, constantly conversation. And I pick up, you know, like, when people in the call centers have those, like, you know, they have to talk all the time, they develop a little tick noise that they have to use to get to, from A to B.
Of course.
Isaac, yeah. Isaac's is like, da, 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 da. Like, he would just continue to do that.
Of course. You don't want to get in trouble at work.
Exactly. So he then says, we're chatting away, and then he says to me, so what is it you do with yourself? I said, I run an events company. That's what I usually say.
It's easier
than trying to explain about podcasting and anyway. So
no, I completely agree. Usually, whenever people ask me, I just tell them, "Oh, you know, pedophilia ring, you know, the whole nine yards."
I mean, believability, right? So
you look the part. It's easy for people to digest.
You really commit to the role. You look Jim Carrey in Man on the Moon. So Isaac says, "Well, what is it you do?" I said, "I run an events company." He's like, "Yeah, oh, cool." And then I clicked, and I was like, "He knows who I am." He knows who I am, and he's trying to get me to say it, and I'm not saying it. I'm not saying it, and he's like, "Oh, that's cool. That's cool. That's cool." And I'm just, I've shut down now because I know what he's trying to do. There's no way I'm not having.
Isaac, we're under your shit, Isaac. We know.
So then he goes, "So, what kind of events is it that you do?" And I was like, "Oh, you motherfucker!" Like, I know. I was like, "Oh, it's just sportsmen Q&As." He's like, "All right, what kind of sportsman?" I was like, "You fucking piece of shit." I was like, "Oh, it's pro wrestlers." I don't know if you've ever watched wrestling. He was like, "Oh yeah. I actually still watch it." And then it was a really long pause that felt so long, and he said the words that make my skin crawl. He went, "Are you Kenny from What Culture?" so I was like, "Yes, I am." And he was like, "Oh, cool." I mean, like, he didn't know. Like, he stumbled upon it, right? Like, he didn't know what he was getting into. So then we're having this, like, 10-minute conversation. And the thing is, right, the safest place to say what I really think is on a recorded call to BT that's never going to be released. I was fucking shitting on everything. I was talking about the boss at What Culture, what a fucking piece of shit he is. I was talking about in-company secrets. I was talking all this sort of stuff. I was just going for it. I was telling him what do you think of Pachiti? What do you think about Jack? I was going fucking through them all. And then, so we're having this chat and it's all going really well. And then There's another pause, and Isaac just goes, so, shame about that cultaholic, eh? And I just went, how are we getting on with that order, Isaac? Is that all going okay? And then...
Like, that's why we're still not touching with the 10-foot pole.
I'm staying away. So then, like, we're it's a very nice conversation. And I feel quite, because, like, the guy's clearly, like, he watches the videos and he's, and you know, it's very lovely. And then he says, oh, so, and I said, you know, I said, Isaac, as long as you get me an installation date before the 15th, you know, we'll be fine. And then he says, well, I've got to be honest with you, the first appointment's the 20th. And I was like, of November?
Oh.
And he was like, yeah. I said, Isaac, Isaac, what I'm about to say is not directed at you. And I think you're lovely. I've had a great chat with you. But what the fuck is November 20th? Like, I was like, that's 3 weeks away. I was like, I could literally backpack round Asia and come back and I'd still be waiting. A woman could get into her fucking second trimester of pregnancy. Well, I don't know if that's true, but, you know, I'm just, for the purposes of the bit, that's what I'm saying. So poor Isaac had to listen to me fucking shoot promo on over 10 minutes.
Just fill your diaper.
So the thing, BT used this company called OpenReach to do these appointments. And I said, here's the thing, Isaac. They were just
Here's the thing, Isaac. You need me to do it for you.
I did. I could have drafted you in. I was like, they were just as shite 5 years ago when I was last with BT. You've not changed. It's got worse. It used to be 2.5 weeks. Now it's 3. I was like, why didn't you use OpenReach? Use somebody else. And I said,
No, shit.
And I said, this isn't the first person this has happened to, Isaac. This has happened to Robert. Remember Robert inside the ropes when you followed over from What Culture and came and listened to it? Robert, happened to him.
It did.
So then I felt really bad. And then I was going to, like, send a tweet out to kind of, like, you know, say something nice about Isaac. Just in case he followed me on Twitter, I thought that would be nice. And before I could even get on Twitter, and this man's, like, mid-shift in his work, you know? So he must have been, he must have, like, went on a break or something and just tweeted out going, didn't expect to get Kenny McIntosh on the phone today. And
big shout, Isaac. Big
so
shout.
Isaac is we chat on Twitter, and I then put like a little Facebook thing out about it, and I like put it out on Twitter, and one of his friends was like, is this legit you, Isaac? And he was like, legit me, mate, legit me. So and then I can't remember if I told this in the podcast very quickly. Last 2 weeks ago, I was putting together a new bank account for business and stuff, and I got everything sorted, and they forgot to send me out a Visa debit card, and they were like, well, listen, the banking manager is going to call you on Monday to go over why you've not got your card and try and fix it for you. Have I told you this yet?
No.
So I'm like, okay, cool, that's fine. So the business banking manager, Chris, calls me and he's like, so he's like, look, it was an error on our part. We just didn't send you the debit card. I've tried to order one for you, but you're gonna have to phone the business banking line. I'll send you the number over text because he'd phone me from like a mobile. It must have been like the bank mobile phone or something.
Sure.
And he said, you know, and just, you know, press this option, do it. I said, yeah, that's great. Thanks for sorting that out. That's cool. And then he went, can I ask you something? This is the business banking manager of the bank. And I said, yeah, sure. And he said, are you Kenny from Inside the Ropes?
Ah, the ITR shout.
And I said,
that's good.
I said, yeah, I am. And he was like, mate, I was at DDP. I was at Sting. I've just bought tickets for Scott Hall. We're going in December. I've been to Ireland. They're great. And I was like, thank you. I appreciate it. And I was like, he was like, mate, if you need anything, you come to me. I'm your guy. And I said, well, I might be coming to you for a loan of a million to try and get the rock, mate. And he was like, just get me a phone. We'll see what we can do. Like, you know, typical Scottish reaction. We'll see what we can do. So, yeah, it's very, very strange, but lovely when people
what was his name?
Chris,
big shout, Chris! If you're listening, we love you.
Chris and Isaac. So there you go. That was my
good guys. Those guys. Round of applause.
There you go. So anyway, so let's go on to Raw, because actually I thought a really, really good show. I mean, well, the third hour dropped off a cliff, but the ending made up for it.
Yeah.
I thought there was some really good stuff on this show.
Some really good stuff. Some really terrible stuff. We'll get into it.
There was. They were from Baltimore, Maryland. Who knew that? It's almost impressive to make the Pittsburgh crowd look lively, but Baltimore managed it.
Yeah, man. Oh, boy. This was the crowd before Halloween, you guys, so they sucked harder than a vampire and they were deader than a zombie.
So the show opens with the Raw roster on stage. Kurt Angle comes out. He wants to apologize to everyone for, you know, letting what happened happen last week. You know, he allowed his friendship with Shane to blind him. They paid the price for it. He said it was a slap in the face, and he put them in harm's way. It won't happen again. And he was like, I promise you. And then Stephanie McMahon's music hits. She comes out. It's been a great 6 months without you. Like, really has. It's been really good without you. Stay away. So she comes out.
She just kills my interest in wrestling, Kenny. Like, yeah, it's like a beautiful tree that's blossoming in spring, my love of wrestling. And whenever she comes around, the tree wilts and turns black and just catches fire, Kenny.
Well, the problem is that when we grew up watching wrestling, you know, past the cartoon era that we started with, when you got into the Attitude Era, part of what was great about the Attitude Era, people who were not... fans during the Attitude Era kind of misunderstand why people loved it. It wasn't because there was tits and ass and all, but it's because there was an anything that can happen feel to the show. And I'm going to be honest, I don't give a fuck that the wrestling matches weren't great. Couldn't care less, because every week I needed to watch it, I needed to see the stories. And the thing that worked the best is that whether you were a good guy or a bad guy or a tweener, everybody got their comeuppance and everybody was part of the show and everybody... You know,
I hate to give Vince Russo any credit whatsoever, but he did integrate everyone on the roster in the show with the story, even if it was just a 5-minute segment backstage. Everybody had a continuing story week to week. Now, whether they were good stories is a whole other thing, but at least it was something.
Well, also, everyone got to go through trials and tribulations and ups and downs. Now, Stephanie just goes through ups. I mean, maybe you count WrestleMania, which got put to a table, but to me, that was just a bump on one night. That wasn't a real story. The last story, and I actually watched this back recently, and you were there, was when Sting came into the WWE and the Authority were banished in that.
Yes.
And I watched that back recently, and it was tremendous. Like, it was really, really fun to watch back and to watch... You know, the different stories within the match of the Big Show turning and Cena eliminated and Ziggler, and it was very, very good. And Stephanie sold her part of it very, very well. And she suffered, which was good. Good, suffer.
There was some character development, is what you're saying? My God.
So let's see what she did here. She comes out, she welcomes everyone to Raw. Says, you know, there's going to be a 25th anniversary of Raw in January. She says that Kurt's been doing a hell of a job. She mentioned, you know, apart from the illegitimate son and Braun Strowman being compacted in a garbage truck, you've done really well. You returned to the ring as part of the Shield. There's a You Still Got It chant. And she said, but when SmackDown invaded Raw, you know, it takes 20 years to build a reputation, only 20 seconds to lose it. Well, if anybody would know about that, it's her, Steph. Kurt Angle tries to explain himself, but of course she cuts him off at the pass every single time. She says she doesn't want to hear any excuses. You know, everyone thinks Shane's a great guy, but he's manipulative and conniving. Shane lost Hell in a Cell, and you know, if he attacks her show, it'll make him bigger and a winner. Angle's responsible for letting Shane make a mockery of what her father built for 25 years. And she said, you know, you're going to be the captain of Team Raw for Survivor Series. I expect results. I expect victory. I expect total annihilation. And if I don't get what I want, I'll be going to find a new general manager. She dropped the mic as she left. I think that the actual verbiage of what she was saying was good, but her delivery of it is so awful that it just kills the buzz of it.
I think the entire segment, Kenny, it's sort of like if you rent a U-Haul, right? And you just fill the U-Haul with feces from all different animal types. And you let that U-Haul bake in the sun for 6 months. And then if you just grab me and throw me in there, that's how I felt, basically, once Stephanie came out and delivered this promo. Both the verbiage that was written and her delivery of it nauseate me. I'm taking the Finn Martin stance on Stephanie. It makes me cringe. It makes me vomit a bit in my mouth. She is constantly lording over and castrating every single performer, male or female, on the roster at every overture.
Can I ask you a question? I want to, because we've been over this before. I don't want us to tread old ground all the time. Let me ask you a different question.
Sure.
So they come to you and they say, okay, we want to bring Stephanie back because, you know, they're going to bring Stephanie back. It's going to build to Hunter and Angle at WrestleMania, whatever. But they bring Stephanie back. So they come to you and they say, right, okay, we want to bring Stephanie back in this opening segment. We want her to put Angle as the captain of the Survivor Series team and we want her to be a heel. How could they have done it better than they did? What would have made it a better segment and more tolerable than the way they executed?
The thing that immediately springs to mind, Kenny, is usually whenever something happens to someone, there is a lesson learned or there is consequences to what has happened and what has transpired. She got her comeuppance at WrestleMania this year. Her and her husband have been off TV ever since. That's sort of been like the 5 month or 6 month break from all of this, right? And that's nice, but what is different since then? So the Kingslayer comes out. She walks right past the Kingslayer, who defeated her and her husband and banished them forever. And immediately we're right back to square one. Seth Rollins is an underling compared to Stephanie McMahon. She holds all the power. She has not changed her character or the dynamic of her character or her performances one bit. There is zero reaction based on what has happened to her. And lo and behold, just give it a few months, maybe even weeks, she will be lording over Seth Rollins, the quote-unquote Kingslayer, who had all the quote-unquote Kingslayer merchandise to brand him as such. And things will be back exactly as they were a year ago in the story. There will be zero progression. There will be basically, Kenny, it's sort of like spinning tires in the mud. It is.
You had a great point, though. I think the key point there that you've hit that's completely on the money is when you strip everything away, it is the fact that there is no reaction to what's happened to her. And the problem is, this is now like the fifth or sixth time we went through this, where she comes back and nothing's changed. So it means that now when we see these stories again, like, are we going to believe? I mean, the difference for me is that I look forward to her getting her comeuppance because it means we get a break from her. So I look forward to the break.
That's bad. Yeah.
But
that,
do you know what? Like,
that is definitely
a good. See, when a heel is effective, you miss them. But I never miss her. And the thing, like
if The Miz went off TV, we would miss The Miz.
Oh, yeah. Well, but the thing that bothers me about the Stephanie thing, it's not that she's not good. It's not like you look at her as a performer and go, oh, she's a terrible performer. It's just that the way that she is portrayed and the way that her character acts with the rest of the role. It's like, I'm watching Retro Raw right now, and there's just been an episode where Steve Austin, he wants to get the Intercontinental title from Owen Hart, Survivor Series, so he attacks Ahmed Johnson when Ahmed Johnson's about to win the title, and he's attacked Farouk and all that, and then there's a big brawl, and he just slides away, because he's not an idiot. He's not going to get involved in this big brawl, and he says, I don't have any problem with Ahmed Johnson or Farouk, they were just in the wrong place at the wrong time. He's clever, and the problem now is that the guys are not booked to be clever as often as they are. And the one guy who is booked to be clever and always will be cleverer than everyone else is Roman Reigns. And he's the guy that, you know, there's all these little things they do with Roman where, like, I think there's like five or six times you could say, if they had just done this one thing instead of this one thing, you know, it'd have been better. Like, if you were intent on him winning the 2015 Royal Rumble, the main reason that reaction was the way they eliminated Daniel Bryan. You know, there's things that you can do to minimize or maximize. you know, you don't put him in the fucking main event at Fastlane with Brian, winner gets to go to WrestleMania. How did that help Roman Reigns? So you need to help characters. So, like, the last time that I think Stephanie was actually effective was the build to SummerSlam with her and Brie Bella, because she actually elevated Brie Bella to a level of people were into that match. And then, of course, she won the match and killed Brie Bella, and the whole thing was kind of pointless. So, you know, even when she's about to do a story, you know, she never follows it through to have the other person ultimately come out on top. Because, like you say, in a couple of weeks, she's going to be all over Seth Rollins again.
Yeah. And things will be as if nothing has happened or changed whatsoever.
The one plus point I will say to the opening segment is I do like the angle. I do like the twist of Kurt Angle being the captain of the Raw team and Shane being captain of the SmackDown team. I think that does make sense. I think people will be excited to see those two guys in that match. And with Angle now having some sort of like stake of why he has to win above brand supremacy, it'll make it a little bit more interesting. So that was the positive I have out of it. Even though there's all the negatives, there's one positive.
I do have a question for you based on all of this, though.
Sure.
Who is the worst character on WWE TV? Is it Stephanie?
I mean, I feel bad saying it's Stephanie because she's only been back for one appearance, but do you know what? It probably is Stephanie, because I don't think there's one performer who could come back in a 5-minute segment and have such a visceral reaction.
Yeah, and not good heat.
No,
go
good.
Away
like,
heat.
Like, even,
turn the channel heat.
Even though you've said in this podcast numerous times that you don't like Roman Reigns' character, there are weeks where he kind of, where you enjoy stuff that he does. But you enjoy a match he's involved in.
The show is weaker without Roman Reigns on it.
Exactly, and that's the key to, I mean, I don't like, who do I not like? Who do I hate on the show?
Kalisto!
No, but he is bad for the show. I'm trying to think of who...
I was hoping I could trick you into...
No way.
Just be like, oh, no, he's great. Yeah.
Well, I'm trying to think if there's somebody that I really dislike...
Bray Wyatt?
Maybe Bray Wyatt. Like, I'm done with Bray Wyatt, but I understand that, like, people, you know, he's a sell, so, you know, but...
He is, you could argue that he's not an effective character, but he is I can't think of the proper verbiage here, but he is a distinct character, Kenny. He could not be mistaken for another character. Therefore, I think based on that principle alone, he has a certain it factor to him as a performer.
Yeah, I would agree with that. We then get Stephanie at the back, kind of saying, you know, if you don't believe me, just ask Mick Foley. And Stephanie leaves. Another limo arrives, and it's the Miz, Curtis Axel, and Bo Dallas. And they're very excited, and he's like, you know, I'm fashionably late, and Kurt Angle tells him to shut up. Angle tells him he's captain of Team Raw. Miz complained about it, and Angle says, you know, you were nowhere to be found when we were under siege last week, and now, you know, you're late. He was like, you're defending your Intercontinental title tonight. I'm not going to tell you who it's against. You're going to need to wait till you're in the ring. I'm going to give WWE props on one thing. They have crowds chanting under siege. I would have bet you, like, my Bobby Heenan plaque that wouldn't have got over.
Yeah, I can't believe that's gotten over. People are really dumb.
Baffled that I got over.
It's so stupid, man. Yeah.
But you know what? I'm going to talk more about this tomorrow with Sandra on the SmackDown Summary. But at the weekend when I was getting my makeup done to be Pennywise the Clown from Sarah, Mitchell and McInnes makeup in Glasgow. If you're in Glasgow and you need anything done, whether it's weddings or fancy dress or whatever, like, Mitchell and McInnes makeup, just Google them in Glasgow, they are tremendous. But Sarah has been watching wrestling for a couple of years. She listens to the podcast. She is great. And she's more casual than us, right? Because she just watches the shows. And I was like, what did you think of the Under Siege thing? And she was raving about it. She was like, I loved it. It was just like so chaotic. Wow. And she was like, I just loved it. Like, all the different characters were kind of, you know, getting involved with each other. And sometimes when I hear from people like that, and I'm not saying it from the aspect of Sarah's a casual viewer, so she's not as intelligent. It's not that at all. But I think sometimes we forget that our job on these podcasts is to analyze. And I think that kind of rubs off on our, you know, Facebook community. Like, we all analyze everything all the time. But I think some people do just think, oh, this is really fun. And that's kind of where it ends for them. Yeah. And I liked hearing that because it made me realize that's why they're doing this kind of stuff, you know, because some people, like the casual audience, you know, they've got 3 million viewers, you know, so a couple of million of them are probably people who are just like, oh, cool, yeah, SmackDown versus Raw. And they don't need more than that. We need more than that because we're like weekly watching it. We need more than that to kind of, you know, go on. But I just thought it was an interesting take from Sarah.
Excellent take.
So we have Bayley come out for her match. She's facing Alicia Fox. Alicia says she's too busy being the captain. She thinks she's the captain of a ship, and I love her. I love her so much. I'm so glad she's team captain.
Val was watching this and just popped so hard whenever this happened. we are big fans of Foxy. True story, by the way. My best friend, a lady, so this doesn't appear sexist. She goes, send me a link to like the WWE's women's roster. She knows nothing about wrestling, right? Mm-hmm. And I said, okay, sure. And I sent it over to her, and she goes, I'm going to judge all of these women based on who I want to fuck the most. And I go, all right. So you can see clearly why we're friends. And so I sent her this list, and I go, does anyone tickle your fancy yet? And she goes, this one's hideous. This one's hideous. What an ugly abomination this one is. And just like people that I would go, oh, no, she's attractive, you know. And then she's just like, nope, gross. Get her out of my sight. And she is infatuated with Alicia Fox. She thinks that she is by far and away the most attractive woman on the roster.
I remember being in a situation where I was around about 5 or 6 of the women's division from Raw.
Yeah.
It wasn't like I'm like sitting there with champagne and going like, all right, ladies, you know, not, but they were in the room.
Right.
I was
of course.
A lot of other people. And what I will say is Alicia Fox is, see when you see her in real life, like I've said hi to her like 3 or 4 times. She's gorgeous. Like she is absolutely gorgeous.
Oh yeah. For the record, I think my friend's right on the money. Alicia Fox all the way, number one, clear cut. Not even debatable for me, Kenny.
Yeah, and I think
and apparently not for my friend.
There you go. I think she's doing the stuff with her as the team captain, as the captain of the ship is just so funny because it's so ridiculous. Yeah. What I think about this show is like, there was so much ridiculous stuff on this show, but like, but kind of the way where I go, oh, I'm glad we got a ridiculous episode, you know? Like, sometimes you get paint by numbers, but like, there's so much in this, that, whether it's terrible or good, you go, that was fucking mental. What was that?
I'm all about it, man. So, I like this stuff. It's fun.
So Alicia is going to put someone else in there against Bayley, and it's Nia Jax, the return of my fave. She comes out. She's not like most girls. She's going to be on Total.
I've heard that. Yeah.
She's going to be on Total Divas this Wednesday night, where apparently her and Alexa Bliss are best pals. So I pretty much am probably going to want to be part of their friendship group at some point, because they of all the women, like, a night out with Nia Jax and Alexa Bliss probably sounds more fun than any of the other ones. So, you know, because, like, Charlotte would be like, I'll come out for a couple, but, like, I've got to be in the gym at, like, 6 to do my moonsault. Natalia would need to Skype her cats. Becky would need to phone home and pay her online banking with, like, Santander or something. Like, Carmella would have to, like, have phone sex with Big Cass because he's at home with nothing to do. So there's all this sort of stuff. I think that, but whereas like Alexa and Nia, they'd be like, let's hit the club and get some shots. Like, okay. So Nia Jax versus Bayley. This was not a great match at all. Really, really sloppy and just kind of, Nia Jax gets the win in about 7 minutes. And then Alicia Fox comes back out. She's got the, and she says, you're my first pick for Team Raw. And Nia Jax is like, yeah, fucking am. Now we'll get to what happens after that in a minute. But talk me through, Alicia Fox is the captain, the return of Nia Jax, the defeat of Bayley, and Nia being the first choice in the team.
This was a little all over the place. The wife and I were watching this, and she's all like, you know, it's kind of bullshit that Nia can just sort of like storm off and do whatever it is that she did. We don't really know, but rumor has it she was demanding more money, using her lineage to The Rock as leverage things of that nature. That's all rumors, of course, so we're not going to speculate on that. But my wife is. She's not a part of Inside the Rope. She can speculate all she wants, and she's all in on that rumor. And she's like, yeah, it's kind of bullshit that she can just sort of wander off and throw a hissy fit and then come back and take Bailey's spot for better or worse, you know, because Bailey's been running through the ringer at this point. But Nia's I thought we would see more improvement from Nia at this point, you know?
Yeah, it's, you know, I was talking to...
I really like her, and I think that she's a huge plus to the women's division, but I thought we'd see more improvement.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I think that what's interesting is that, like, for Nia and Alexa, like, they're very new, like, in terms of being in the main roster, and, like, I think there is a big difference between wrestling at Full Sail when, like, the whole crowd has been on your journey the whole time, to them being at Raw, where, like, half the crowd have only seen you a handful of times or whatever. But I was talking to a friend last night about Bailey, and he had said that he doesn't think there's been a good Bailey match since she faced Nia Jax in London at TakeOver. And I went to go and argue with him. And I'm just kind of, I think that's probably my last favorite Bailey match. Like, yeah. I wasn't a big fan of the Asuka matches in NXT. There's not really been anything on the main roster that's really hit. So, yeah, it's tough. I almost feel like with Bailey, I'm kind of, it's almost like a Bray Wyatt thing where I'm kind of going, like in theory, the character I'm all in, but like in the ring, I'm just going, there's nothing to cling to. And I think maybe just. With Bailey, like, I know she said in the Steve Austin podcast, oh, you know, I might turn heel. I think she has to, because she's just dying out there now. And
yeah, yeah.
And I think that it's, I think part of it's booking, but I think part of it has got to go on her, you know? It's like, you know, let's look at Cesaro, right? Cesaro, who's one of your favorites. I love him too. Cesaro, even though he's not where we want him to be, he makes the most out of the situations he's in. And he is...
He's one of the most over guys in the locker room. I know that after that hit to the mouth.
Yeah, like he... But he takes... If he's only got 5 minutes on Raw, he'll make sure he hits one uppercut or one thing that you go, fucking hell, that was great. Like, he always takes He doesn't complain. He just kind of, like, does what he wants, does what he can within the segments, you know. And I think that's what carries him as being such a great part of the roster. Whereas you get... What has Bailey done lately? What has she done? I mean, but even before she left, like, the feud with Alexa Bliss wasn't very good. I'm trying to not say what I think you all probably think I'm feeling about it, but yeah, it's call the paramedics, we're in trouble.
Yeah, it's you don't want to pull the plug just yet, but I mean. See, at some point, something's got to give, right?
At this point, would a heel turn be the worst thing?
No.
I mean, look what the heel turn's doing for Sami Zayn. You know, look at he is one of the highlights of SmackDown. And the I meant to tell you this. Have you heard Sami on the Edge and Christian podcast?
Not yet. I'm going to listen to it today.
Okay, I'll not spoil the exact bit. Go listen to it, folks. And near the end, he talks about. The vision that he had for his heel character was different from Vince's, and Vince was kind of like, you know, will you try my way? And it's the way they're doing now. And he was like, and it's genius. He was like, and the way he is doing it now is great, you know? So he goes into it in a lot of detail, and because David's listened to it today, I don't really fancy spoiling it all for him, but,
of course.
You know, so Vince seems to be,
you know, behind it,
and in on the Sami thing, and sometimes you need to do the thing you maybe don't want to do to get behind the guy that you need to get behind to get where you need to be. So maybe that's what she needs to do. But all is not lost, because as Bailey is, as Nia Jax has won, we hear the music of Samoa Joe. Joe has returned to the WWE, comes down, huge reaction, he gets in the ring, he says, seems like some of you miss me. He said, and then he completely turns heel straight away, says, I've not missed you, and then says that he would use the disrespect of the people as fuel while he beats people up. He then has a match with Apollo Crews, kills him in 3 minutes, And then after the match, Titus gets in. Do you know Titus's best spot that he has is when he removes his jacket and pretends that he's going to fight the guy that just beat Apollo? It's my favourite thing. Because I'm like, look at the fucking size of him! Oh my god!
Apollo loses so often that that's now a spot.
Isn't that a spot? It is. Isn't it though?
It totally is. I have a controversial take on this. I think, after seeing the reaction he got and just the demeanor in which he expresses, Joe very well could be the next Stone Cold Steve Austin. He is so cool. He is so badass. He is not going to be a heel for long because that crowd loves cool bad guys. And they will cheer him like a motherfucker.
I think the important thing to know, because I know that a lot of people were very... So, and then basically Samoa Joe chokes out Titus. I know a lot of people are very upset about Samoa Joe going heel. This may be unpopular. I completely understand why they've made him a heel right now. They need to make him a heel right now. If he went babyface right now, the pieces aren't there for programs they want to put him in. So yes. I'd rather that we get a short-term heel run out of him. And he, because, like, you know, you've got Braun as a babyface now. You've got the Shield. Yes. There's two.
Now, if Braun hadn't turned,
this would have been Joe.
Then Joe should be a face. But with Braun turning, because that's an obvious program, right?
Yeah, I almost feel like Braun and Joe have to be opposite sides, whatever they do. Like, you've got Braun on one side, you get Joe on the other, because they're like the killers.
Yeah, yeah, no, for certain, for absolute certain.
So what did you think of the return of Joe and the annihilation of the Titus Worldwide brand?
Oh, I love Joe. Joe is one of my top five performers. He has it. He has a unique look. There's no one who moves like him on the roster. There's no one who strikes like him on the roster. He has the best facial expressions of anyone on the roster, male or female. He looks like a killer, and that's why people are going to end up loving him in the end. Because how can you boo a guy that's so dominant and so badass? That's exactly how Steve Austin was. He's the next Austin, you guys. Book it right now. You heard it here first. And I'm the voice of wrestling, Kenny.
Do you know
I'm always right.
Do you know what's funny? I have this theory that I think you could pick these three guys I'm about to mention and that you can parallel them directly to the Attitude Era. You had The Rock, you had Mankind, you had Steve Austin. I think that Roman Reigns is The Rock. I think that Samoa Joe is Stone Cold Steve Austin. And I think Braun Strowman will ultimately be Mankind or Mick Foley.
Yeah.
Because Braun is never going to be the guy. Because as much as and trust me, I love him to death. He's the big guy. He's the kind of guy that, like, he'll have runs at the top and stuff like that. But he's not going to be the guy that's always on top.
He's going to be the guy that you want to see because you know something crazy is going to happen.
Yeah, he is the
Mick Foley.
He's the Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know. He's like, I don't want to see Arnold Schwarzenegger to see Shakespeare. I want to see people being blown up or you know, men turning into liquid as policemen, whatever it is. And then I think Samoa Joe, I'm not saying Samoa Joe is going to be Stone Cold Steve Austin in the sense that he's going to, you know, revolutionize wrestling and be on fucking MTV. But I think that Joe could be... I think if you want to make Roman Reigns your top babyface, use Joe to get there. Use Joe as the big babyface guy, have Roman as The Rock kind of heel, and then, you know, eventually you can... Because Joe is, what, 40, 39? He's older. So he's not got, like, tons of time left, but I think that you should use him while you can to get... Because when you look at on this show, the reactions to Joe and Braun, incredible reactions.
Yeah. No, this is, I think you nailed it, in all honesty, with those three. Naming them off like that, perfect.
You know, and it's getting to that time of year where I go, oh, there's so many people that I want to be in good WrestleMania matches. There's like, I need Braun in one. And I mean, see, like, if they don't have any injuries, I mean, look at, right, so here's the people that you've got that you know have to be on WrestleMania, right? Given the current storyline climate, right? You've got The Shield, you've got Braun Strowman, you've got Samoa Joe, you've got Finn Balor, you've got Sami Zayn, Kevin Owens, AJ Styles, Bobby Roode, Nakamura, Jinder Mahal, John Cena, Brock Lesnar. You know, that's all, you're already at 12.
Can I make a bold prediction?
Sure.
Bobby Roode and Shinsuke will not have singles matches at WrestleMania.
Ooh.
Yep.
I think it'll be one of the two of them, tops.
Yeah. If it is, maybe Nakamura.
Yep, it's going to be interesting. There's definitely going to have to be a play for time, because there's so many people. Anyway, I do want to ask you very quickly, they said that Raw is going to turn 25 years old in January, so they're going to do a simulcast from the Barclays Center and the Manhattan Center. The Barclays Center is going to have Raw and SmackDown superstars appearing in wrestling. And at the Manhattan Center, they're going to have Shawn Michaels, Kevin Nash, Bret Hart, Mick Foley, Ric Flair, and The Undertaker appearing in the Manhattan Center. What do you think of the idea of Raw 25 from those two venues?
I love it. The Manhattan Center, seeing a wrestling show at the Manhattan Center is actually on my bucket list. That's something that I have to do before I'm dead. So that is, that's on my agenda. I won't be able to make it to New York for this, since we're doing New Orleans, but that's how much I love the Manhattan Center, though. I think it's the ultimate wrestling venue, you know? I love it.
Yeah, it's tremendous. It's going to be a very fun night. I really want someone to be in the Barclays Center and then attack someone in the Manhattan Center later on. Like, I want to see someone like that. Like,
yeah, for sure.
Town. So up next, we have The Miz against Matt Hardy for the Intercontinental title. They go about 13 minutes. The first half was quite slow, but it picked up towards the end. Matt goes for a moonsault. The crowd go crazy. But in the end, Matt's trying all these things to get pinned, and he gets the twist of fate, but Miz cleverly rolls to the apron. Miz ends up getting a clothesline in the top rope for Hardy, and then hits the skull crushing finale for the win. And Miz retains. What did you think of this match?
It was a really good match, and I liked the dynamic a whole lot, but it made me realize how sad I am about the Hardy Boys 6 months later.
Yeah, it's part of the problem is, you know, we had all that hope that they were going to be broken, you know, and that's what they needed to be. That's what they need to be.
But now they're, I mean, you're talking about Matt Hardy, who resurrected his career, and now he's just losing on a regular basis. So it's just sort of, and whenever he does win, it's in just like matches that don't matter, I guess, is the best way to put it.
It's a shame. The last person I'm going to count out in the world is Matt Hardy.
Yeah, of course.
But,
of course.
Yeah, I hope things pick up.
I can only speak to the state of the wrestling world as of right now. And as of right now, it bums me out.
Yeah, bums me out too. Especially when that fucking Impact shite has to stay on. And we can't... Just give us the broken Hardys.
Yeah.
Fuck off.
Yeah, come on, guys. Stupid. So petty.
Alexa Bliss tells Kurt Angle she could help him. He suggested cutting Mickie James, cutting dead weight, and bringing in somebody from the Mae Young Classic. Kurt Angle said, I'm all about bringing in new talent, but not getting rid of Mickie James. And he books the main event as Alexa Bliss and Mickie James for the women's title. We see Asuka killing a jobber, Stacey Cullen, in a minute and 40. Finally, Asuka's started to kill people. This is
the way that it should have been from day one, instead of having her have competitive matches against people who will be working the indie soon. Fuck's sake.
Yep.
Talk about a misfire. Jesus fucking Christ. Are you kidding me?
I mean, usually...
you gotta make Shimmer look strong, I guess, Kenny. For fuck's sake. God,
I mean, usually it takes them 5 months to realize a mistake, and this time it took them 8 days, so that's progress.
I guess. I mean, you know... I would say not shoving your dick in the car door and slamming it would be, you know, a bad... Just doing that as is a bad idea. But, I mean, at least realizing that you need to go get your dick set right after you did that, instead of just allowing it to improperly heal so you have a crooked dick for the rest of your life. Because that's what they're doing. They are bending their dicks to crooked proportions by screwing up the Asuka thing.
It's a lot of dick chat.
A lot of dicks just being crushed and obliterated.
I tell you what I didn't like on this show, and it's not like it's not a killer, but it's just a little element that I would have changed, is I would not have had Asuka at the top of the ramp in a t-shirt.
Her wearing t-shirts.
At the beginning of the show? Like, I was just, no.
Yeah.
I would curb that, please.
She was the first person my eyes saw, and it really broke my heart.
Up next, Kurt Angle's in the back, and while he's texting, he freaks out and starts yelling into a walkie-talkie, "They're here! They're here! They're here!" And the camera pulls back, and it's Daniel Bryan standing in his office. Angle's asking, you know, "Are you here to finish the job that Shane started?" Bryan's there to make peace. He said, "You know, I'm taking a risk by showing up here. Eddie wants to tear me apart. I didn't even know what Shane was going to do." Angle said the Raw roster would chew him alive, so he was going to keep him in the office. And Angle told Daniel to deliver the message that he's bringing his gold medals in the Raw roster, and they're going to take out SmackDown. Angle left, and then Bryan was on the phone telling someone it didn't go well, and the lights go out, and Bryan is like, basically cuts the call. He's alone in the dark, and then when we come back, he's on the phone telling someone he thought he could reason with Kurt Angle, but the lights are out, the door's locked. Asked if the person could call him back, and Kane comes out of nowhere and choke slams Daniel Bryan off camera. But you see Daniel Bryan being raised by Kane. This was bonkers and it was terrible, but I kind of loved every second of it. Especially my favourite thing about it. Can you imagine what my favourite thing was here? Just think about what I would enjoy the most that's terrible here.
The fact that Daniel Bryan had a flashlight in his hand in the form of a cell phone and he wasn't using it.
Yes, he had his contact page open. Oh, because you could see him standing going, "I don't give a fuck about this."
Yeah,
He gave zero fucks.
He clearly wasn't in a call. He was just on a screen. Yeah, yeah.
Fucking Kenny Omega's putting on 6-star matches dressed as fucking Jasmine, and I've got to fucking get a chokeslam in the dark by Kane.
You know what my favorite part of it was?
What?
The worst acting that I've seen all year in a WWE performance, when Kurt Angle went from just totally fine to screaming, "They're here! They're here! They're here!" to immediately being fine again. Like, "Oh, Daniel, what's going on?" It was like fucking Tommy Wiseau directed this bit.
If somebody had sent me this whole thing, right, and said, "Right, Kenny, you're the decider if this segment goes live or not," I'd be like, "Make sure this makes air." I am all about this. Kurt Angle's got a walkie-talkie. Who's on the walkie-talkie? He's got a walkie-talkie. He's doing terrible acting. Brian's standing there like, "Why the fuck are you shouting at a walkie-talkie, mate? What are you doing?" And then, like, Kane shows up, and they used to be a tag team, and Kane's trying to chokeslam him, and Brian takes a bump. Oh, it was superb. Loved every second of it.
So good.
So good.
So good, yeah. So horrible, but so good.
Yeah, exactly. Finn Balor then takes on Cesaro. They have a really fun match, which was just, you know, great to watch these two going at it. And in the end, Finn Balor got a win by doing the double stomp to the back of Cesaro's neck. So Balor gets a nice bit of, you know, redemption of a victory over Cesaro. And then as he's leaving, Kane's music plays. Kane comes out and attacks Finn Balor on the stage. Kane puts Balor down with the tombstone pile driver. The trainers run out to check on Finn. Now, somebody else brought this up, and I think it's a fair point, of usually the camera work in WWE is very good, right? That's one of the things that we can't...
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
But on this show, there's a couple of things I was like, what the fuck? What is Kevin Dunn doing? Because...
You claim that the camera work is good. If you ask Val.
I mean, Val, see, the thing is, Val is a woman who I can never predict, right? Val's one of those women that you go, Val would hate that. And then randomly Val would be like, "Nah, I love it." Like, I could never know. I cannot predict her.
Val will sit and watch the average segment on Raw and just go, "I feel like I'm watching fucking Batman Begins with all these camera cuts." She's like, "I'm so disoriented. I'm going to have a seizure. I don't know who's attacking who now." So, yeah, no, Val despises the camera cuts in WWE production.
What I mean is, usually WWE's production levels are high, right, when they do these shows. But on this show, we had Daniel Bryan backstage on his phone, and it's filmed from the angle of, you can clearly see his contact screen.
Yeah.
right? Like, what I don't understand is why couldn't you have just, like, had him call somebody and then we could just see that he was on a call? Like, anyway, so, and then the other thing is, Finn Balor gets a tombstone and they show you the exact bit that shows you that Balor's head is fine and protected the whole time. And then he fucking sells it like Linda McMahon when she got tombstoned by Kane, which, to be, if you've not seen that, please YouTube Kane tombstones Linda McMahon. She sells that like she was murdered. It's tremendous.
It's wonderful. I will say, though, this is the first tombstone that we've seen since The Undertaker at WrestleMania. And with Kane using the chokeslam, I honestly didn't know if we would ever see another tombstone in WWE ever again.
Yeah, I think you're going to see one in January, pal. Here's my question for you. So last week we were very kind of like, why the fuck did Finn Balor get killed the way he did? And then, you know, Finn gets a win here over Cesaro that wasn't like a fluke. It was like a hard-fought win. Kane attacks both. This feels to me like it's more of a story than I thought it was now. But is the story just that Finn has to become the demon to beat Kane? Is that the story, do you think?
I really hope not, because if that is the story, then Finn has to become the demon to defeat most of his opponents, which kind of defeats the purpose. It's like, why wouldn't he just be the demon for every match if it's going to take him becoming the demon to win any match? You know? The demon no longer becomes special at that point, Kenny.
Yeah, no, the demon shouldn't be on every show. But I'll give them this. Last week, I was ready to just, like, throw the towel in. This week, I'm a bit intrigued. I'm kind of like, okay, yeah, there's a story here that they're trying now. I'm curious. I'll go with it. And I just fucking love Kane. I don't care. I don't care that he's shite and has a gut the size of Japan. He's so crap.
A 50-year-old man, Jesus, man. I know a lot of 50-year-olds who don't look like that. I'm fucking 33 and I don't look like that.
You look good. You give yourself too much of a hard time.
Buddy, I'm not here to talk about your sexual inclinations. Jesus.
I'm shaking my head.
You finally give me a compliment, and I'm just like, no, fuck you, I'm not taking it.
Yep. There you go. And then he applauds his own joke. Is there anything more David J. McCutcheon than that? So Kane is in the ring after he's killed Balor, and the Shield music hits. We get Seth and Dean coming out. Sheamus and Cesaro have stayed at ringside. Kane's kind of dominating early, and then, you know, basically all the stuff where you've got Rollins and Ambrose and Cesaro and Sheamus all trying to kind of get involved at different points, and Sheamus and Cesaro are attacking Ambrose, and Rollins dives onto them, and he goes for like a springboard move onto Kane, but Kane catches them in a chokeslam for like a surprise win. So Kane gets the win. After the match, Kane goes to pick him up. Ambrose gets involved and hits the dirty deeds on Kane. Kane then sits up. Sheamus and Cesaro attack. Kane gives Ambrose a tombstone, and then Rollins kind of covers him to protect him, which I thought was a really, really clever spot. Because what was the whole thing that Dean Ambrose would not go back to Seth Rollins for? Because he didn't have his back.
Absolutely.
And this time Seth Rollins was willing to cover Ambrose so there's no more punishment. That was a really great attention to detail moment there.
I think with the Shield, they pay strict attention to what they're doing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and it feels
at least more attention than you would expect from, you know, just your, you know, the Shield are going to get more attention to detail and more tender love and care from creative than, say, the Bar will.
That is very true. I mean, it seems that we're kind of heading in the direction of the three-man Shield against Kane, Cesaro, and Sheamus, which I'm all in for. I think that'd be really fun. So we'll see how it goes. But maybe in the meantime it's going to be Rollins, Ambrose, and Balor against Cesaro, Sheamus, and Kane. I don't really know, but we're heading somewhere, so we'll see where we go.
For sure.
Brian's on a gurney getting taken away, and then like Corey Graves was, you know, I thought Brian was really here for the greater good, and Booker T's like, no, he had to be killed because he's from SmackDown, and you're like,
can Booker T please retire before I genuinely start to dislike him? Because Booker T like TV champ, US champ era WCW Booker T, one of like my five favorite wrestlers from that era. I loved Booker T. And
I loved 2011-2012 commentator Booker T, because then he wasn't a caricature. You know, he did Shucky Ducky Quack Quack as like a gaffe one time, and then it became like a funny thing.
Yeah, yeah. But it was natural, and
he's
was
actively
fun,
terrible. Like, and I don't really understand. Like, are they scripting him to be like this? Is he doing this on his own? I'm just really baffled by the narrative that has, because even if a commentator is bland or not, for the most part, commentators seem to have a narrative of how they approach covering wrestling, right? Like, Corey Graves is mostly a heel, but, you know, he hated Elias in NXT, so he sticks to
right,
here.
Right. Graves allows attention to detail, and I feel... Attention to detail, pardon me. And I feel like with Graves in particular, if they present him... With a story that he will dislike, he will actively turn it down and be like, nope, no way.
Wait, and even Byron Saxton. I like Byron Saxton. I know a lot of people don't like him, but
I do too. The ride along episode with Graves, Nia Jax.
So good.
Oh my god, you have to watch that, guys. Please watch that.
Me
and Val laughed until we cried.
It's the best ride along they ever did.
It is.
And I like Ride Along. Ride Along is one of my favorite shows in the network.
For sure.
I've not checked. There's a new one with the Hardys I've not checked out yet, but I need to get on that.
Yeah,
so I mean, even with Biden has a kind of way that he goes. With Booker, I'm like, I don't get what was going on. Like, he keeps giving Jason Jordan shit for no reason. I heard a great theory from Brian Alvarez. Or was it Brian Alvarez? I was listening to somebody, and there's a theory that, like, Booker T's really angry at Jason Jordan because he's Jason Jordan's dad. And he's angry that his son is using Kurt Angle. And I'm like, but why wouldn't he just say something? Why would he sit and comment? But I mean, that'll probably be exactly what happens. Do you know what I mean? That'll be...
Yeah.
But yeah, Booker T is at a point now, we were talking about it at the TLC review as well, where like, sometimes like it's funny when like commentators are terrible, but he's morphed into a part where I think he actually... I'm not a guy who complains about commentary as much as a lot of people do, but I think he's starting to really hurt the show with how bad he is.
Yeah. I would agree with that, yes.
So after that, we got The Miz and The Miztourage trying to leave. Sorry, not at this point. The Miz and The Miztourage are in their locker room, and they notice a smell, and there's like a bag of garbage. And Miz is like, oh my god, Braun Strowman's in the building. And Curtis Axel's like, he's never coming back. We've got your back. Nothing's going to happen to you. And Miz is very, very worried. So we'll pick up with that in a little bit. And then up next, fuck me, the trick or street fight. It's a play on words, right? Because it's not trick or treat. It's not a street fight. It's trick or street fight. And it's Heath Slater and Rhino against Gallows and Anderson. Gallows and Anderson are dressed up as Sex Ferguson and Chad Too Bad. And Heath Slater is Santa Claus, and Rhino is Mrs. Claus. Rhino in drag is Mrs. Claus. My lord. They have this like 5-minute street fight thing with pumpkins and shit, and Rhino is flashing Gallows and Anderson as Mrs. Claus, and this is bad. Like, it's so terrible.
Everyone hated this. There wasn't like anybody... Like, the only thing I can imagine is that Vince was in the back going, ha 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 ha! Look at him! He's flashing his pussy to everybody!
Do you know what, though? Like, I get, like, if you run a multi-million dollar company and you have these TV shows, we do like 5 hours of content a week, and you go, do you know what? I want to see this 5-minute match. I don't care what everybody else thinks. That's fine. As long as the fucking crowd in the arena react to it as if it's happened. Yeah. But, like, nobody reacted. It was, like...
No one cared. The people on commentary didn't care. The performers themselves didn't care.
Did laugh when Rhino flashed. That did make me laugh. I'll give him that. Because it was so horrible that it just made me chuckle. But I will make a prediction here. Gallows and Anderson are on the way out.
That is the rumor from Twitter, because they've removed all instances of WWE from their Twitter.
Even before that, though, when I was watching this, I was like, this is near the end. Because the problem that they had coming in and I want to liken it to compare it to AJ Styles. When AJ Styles came into WWE, he had to eat some shit initially. You know, you're going to work with Chris Jericho. Cool. Yeah, that's not eating shit. That's great. But we're going to have you lose. Oh, okay, yeah. Cool. I'll lose to Chris Jericho, no problem. We're going to have you work with Roman, but you're going to lose. Okay, then he has such a good match with Roman, he gets another match. Then they like him enough to go, let's put him with Cena. Cena wants to put him over at SummerSlam, so he gets to beat Cena. Then he, you know, oh, we ain't going to be really funny if Ellsworth pins you. Okay, I'll make it work. So he, like, does all this stuff, where now, and then he worked, the key one, I think, that will cement him, he worked with Shane and nailed it. He's golden for life now. He's fine.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas Gallows and Anderson came in, they're a tag team, which Vince doesn't have any interest in. They're coming in with a bunch of insider references to a gimmick that Vince doesn't want to push.
Yep.
And if they're not, if they've not got to like a steady point in the roster by now, it's not going to happen. And the sad thing is Vince sees Carl Anderson. You can see the way they book it. Vince sees Carl Anderson as just a job guy.
Yeah.
Because Anderson always has
a good hand.
A good hand, but he always take the pinfall. Gallows very rarely takes the pinfall. And the thing is, I do understand it, like a lot of the main roster audience will not get a lot of the references. Because there's not, you and I, a talking shop reference, we're all about it. But the mainstream audience don't know it and they don't want to explore that. So I think the writing's on the wall, and I just think that they would be better in Japan. The roster now is so big that I think if you're there a year and you're just not getting any traction, you're better to leave. What is
the point of staying unless you really need the money that bad? And the Good Brothers can easily go over to Japan and make a living.
Exactly. So. Anyway, for anyone at home who cares, Heath Slater and Rhino got the win. Miz speaks to Kane backstage and asks him, I think this happened before the Trick or Treat fight, but Miz talks to Kane and he's like, you remember we put Strowman in the back of the garbage truck? And Kane's like, well, I think we all did. And he's like, no, I think it was you. He says, do you think Strowman might come back? And he's like, well, if he comes back, he knows where to find me. And Miz said, I'm so glad we're on the same team. Kane told me he was on his own. Then he gets to Sheamus and Cesaro, and he's asked about the garbage bag. They try and reassure him, and he's like, oh, I'm so glad we're a team. And he's like, they're like, you're on your own. So Miz calls Curtis Axel to tell him to get the bags, to leave. And then a couple of segments later, they go to leave, and Kurt Angle stops them and basically says, you're not leaving. You arrived late. You need to stay to the end of the show. And Miz is just terrified. He is Georgie running after a paper boat. He is terrified. but we'll get to that. Elias is here. Who wants to work with Elias?
I do. Like Elias. So long as he's not wrestling. I like Elias.
He said Jason Jordan won't be interrupting this week. He makes a joke about the Baltimore Ravens. He sings the ballad of Jason Jordan. Jordan comes out, I groan. Elias swings and misses the guitar. Jordan smashes up the guitar. Oh my god, I can't. If you said to me, do you want to take a really satisfying shit or watch Jason Jordan versus Elias? It's a no contest.
I mean, to be fair, if you ask me if I wanted to take a satisfying shit or do most things, I will choose the satisfying shit.
If you've got a shit and you're reading a good magazine, you're not in a hurry. My God.
Oh yeah. There are a few feelings better in this world than pooping perfectly, Kenny.
I don't like how you added my name in when you were talking about that, but okay. Enzo Amore's out with Drew Gulak. His voice is back, but he's got Drew Gulak doing his lines. And in this segment, the greatest thing in the history of professional wrestling happened. Because Drew Gulak was doing Enzo's lines, and he's talking about, Kurt's three eyes, and the fourth is for incompetence. And Drew says, there's only one word to describe Kalisto, and I shall spell it out for you. S-O-F-T, soft. And Enzo Amore looks at him in the best way possible and I didn't realize I needed this bromance. These two together are fucking great.
Just money. Print it. I love it. I love Drew Gulak. I always have. I'm really happy that he's getting some time to shine on the main roster television program. I'm hoping that Vince sees the money in him like we do, and that these two get a Breezango type of bromance brewing. That would be great.
It would be tremendous. Kalisto then comes out to ruin everyone's fun, as he always does. He beats Drew Gulak in like a minute. And apparently, we're going to see Kalisto versus Enzo Amore at Survivor Series for the Cruiserweight title.
Oh, boy.
Now, I do want to ask you very quickly, there have been some rumors, and they seem to be from legitimate sources, that Rockstar Spud of Impact Wrestling is going to be joining 205 Live soon.
That would be a really good addition for 205 Live, because Spud is a very entertaining performer. He could go toe-to-toe with Enzo on the mic, and it would be a breath of fresh air for the Cruiserweight division. And it wouldn't be someone who would be relegated to the Cruiserweights. I think that it's safe to say that Spud's ceiling would be the Cruiserweights, but he could make a lot of money doing that and make himself well-known, too, to the masses. So I like that a lot, actually.
And then the other one that's interesting is apparently the idea is as soon as creative is ready, Hideo Itami joins 205 Live.
Yeah, I mean, you saw what they did with Nakamura, so it's probably for the best, but I don't know. If I were Itami, I'd get the hell away from WWE as fast as possible.
If they got Hideo Itami on 205 Live and then Spud, and I think they need another name, and then along with Enzo and Drew Gulak, like, you could have something there. I'm not saying people would all of a sudden care, but like if you had all those guys, I would give it a couple of weeks to check it out and see if there's anything there. So
no, for sure.
Because I know I keep saying it as if it's like a broken fucking record, but like Hideo Itami. With her, even, I don't care how talented he is. He is very talented, but like, you look at Raw and SmackDown, and there's barely enough room to push everyone on Raw and SmackDown.
Right, right. Like, at this point, I feel like the rosters are just too overcrowded. If I were some of these guys, I would just go on the indies and be the biggest fish in that pond, as opposed to just another small fish in the largest pond.
And that's like Neville.
That's just me.
If Neville gets to leave and do his own thing, like he will. The only way Neville is going to be a big deal in the WWE, which I assume is probably his goal long term, is to leave and become a big deal. That's it. So,
yeah.
And the problem is like there's so many guys that probably want to leave and do something so they can come back and be a big deal. But like you kind of have to like pick your spot, right? Because if you're Ryback, like Ryback left and he was a big deal. And actually, I was around a wrestler not too long ago, and I think this is a really clever thing. And I never thought about it. And he said, "You never want to be the high price guarantee guy." I said, "What do you mean?" He said, "You don't want to be getting $450,000 a year as a downside." I said, "Why not?" Because if you're getting 450 a year, right, as a downside,
yeah,
you're $450,000, whatever. If you're not a main event level guy, like your contract's gonna be one of the first to go. If you're a mid card guy and they need to cut some beef, like they're gonna cut you. Whereas if you have like a $200,000 guarantee or $250 or whatever, you'll make tons more every year without question. But you're
longevity.
Never
longevity.
Yeah, you're never really gonna be in the chopping block.
Right.
You're going to be able to either, you know, so with Ryback, he was asking for all this money, and then the position that he was in, he wasn't able to back it up. And then he left, and then, you know, obviously with me doing the shows that we do and stuff, I am, you know, I know of prices of what people cost and stuff, and Ryback has chosen to command a higher rate than I think he would get back.
Right.
And the problem with that is that nobody's talking about Ryback. And when they are, that's when he's being fucking horrendous on his podcast about mental health or something. So you need to pick your spot. Like Ryback kind of mucked it up. Whereas like Cody Rhodes nailed it. Absolutely nailed it. And I think that Neville would too. So we'll see. But I think with Neville gone, I mean, they need another Neville-like character, like that, like somebody who's believable and who's a bigger name on top of a Tammy and Spud. If you want people to get interested, but I think Spud's a really positive step in the right direction for that show.
Absolutely.
We get the main event, Alexa Bliss and Mickey James. I thought this was bad. I thought this was really bad.
Yeah, I'm so sick. How many times do we have to see this?
Yeah, I know the crowd were chanting CM Punk, and some people are going to just like go mad, but like that crowd, you know, it's been 3 hours, and you give them this, and they don't care about it, and it was bad. And I did feel for Mickey James, because Mickey James was trying, you know, at points to really get something going, but yeah, it, for me, it didn't work.
There's only so many reruns that you can watch. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It's sort of like, I don't watch SmackDown, but I always make sure to read the results, listen to the summary, things of that nature. It's sort of like how Bobby Roode and Dolph Ziggler can't get away from each other, so it's going to kill both of them.
Well, I mean, the hope is that's not going to happen. He's beat him now in the 2 out of 3 falls match, but the key is, yeah, he has to move on now. If he comes, because you can't beat the person decisively and then go back again.
Yeah.
What's the point? It's just.
For sure. Completely and entirely agree.
But I think with the, I think the problem that they're going to run into is like, so Alexa Bliss, I think, is just a tremendous character. Really good character. But she's at the point now where it's like, right, okay, we need to start having some matches that click.
And she's not.
And they're not clicking, so. But I digress away from this to maybe the segment of the year. There have been so many.
Not the segment of the year for me, but it's not even Braun's best segment of the year. But holy shit.
But I could argue this one in contention, because fuck me, this was good. Braun is love. So The Miz, Dallas, and Axel are all like frantically running through the backstage area to get out. They get to the garage, the limousine's there, honestly, the car's there. They pack all the bags in, they get in the car, and then as the car's about to move, the car like jilts, stops, and Miz looks through the front. They can't get out, the car's locked. They look ahead, and there's a garbage truck. And then all this garbage starts pulling out for about 30 seconds, and then appearing completely fine, oiled up, and in gear, is Braun Strowman. And he looks straight ahead at The Miz in an empty car park garage, looks straight ahead and just shouts, "Braun!" And then The Miz and Axel and Dallas run out of the car. Now then Braun Strowman jumps from a garbage truck onto the car, to the top of the car, jumps the car onto the ledge of the arena building, and then chases them at full speed. I mean, talk me through, because you were watching Raw, but you were behind, so you hadn't watched it, and I was saying, right, keep watching. Talk me through what you were experiencing here as it was going on.
The camera angles and the shots between the limo and the pile of garbage that was on the floor now, it was like, so they're seeing something that we're not, and they are freaking out. What is it going to be? Out from the rubble of all of the garbage, like the Toxic Avenger himself, or the Toxic Crusader himself, here he comes. It's Braun Strowman. Just exactly as they left him, presumably. I just assume he's been living there. He's sort of like the bad guy from Terminator 2, you know? He's shifting shape. He wasn't a cube, Kenny, because they compacted him. You know that. You saw the proof. They murdered him, for fuck's sake.
I saw it.
And he regained Braun form. And then sprinted out after them, full speed ahead. And it was something that will live in GIF lore on the internet for many years to come. Because what a full sprint that was. I love this. It was the perfect precursor to Halloween. It was the monster movie come alive, Kenny. What were your thoughts on this? How elated were you, both to the carnage in and out of the building?
I don't really usually stay up and watch Raw Live that much, but because like this is the one time of the year where like the UK clocks have went back or for whatever it is, I think it's back, and it, but the US ones haven't, so it basically Raw's on at midnight rather than 1 a.m. I'll watch an hour of it, and then when I kind of got the tease of Braun, I was like, I can't go to bed. I'll just be lying there thinking, Braun, he might be coming back. so I was like, oh, I need to stay up now. And then in my head, I'm going, oh, what if they fuck us? Like, what if we don't get Braun? Like, what if we don't get him? And then when Miz gets in the car, you're like, it has to happen now.
Yeah.
Like, there's just no way. They've teased it to the point where it has to happen. And what I thought was so great about it was, like, when the Miz was in the car, I felt like we were, like, 5 seconds away from The Undertaker being in the front seat going, where to, Stephanie?
Yeah, exactly. Val kept screaming, is he the driver? Yeah.
But what I loved about it was, like, so you see all the garbage coming out of the truck, and I'm like, how the fuck is he? I was so excited about how he was going to appear. Like, and then it almost was like a hologram appeared of him. And he's like standing there like he's fucking Triple H with the water in his mouth, just looking down, waiting for the cue. And then when the face comes up, and he just, and it was the thing that made me just cackle. And it's like the middle of the night, and everybody's asleep, and he's just looking at them through this car, and just goes, "Braun!" Oh my god, it ended me, absolutely ended me. And then his fucking leapfrog over the car. I mean, he's just the
just
best.
Just brilliant. Completely unlike anything on WWE television, right?
Yeah, and this whole thing reminded me of the Attitude Era. Because this is the kind of stuff that we got, and it was fun. Like, it was just fun, and I think I'll give Raw props on that. They've tried a lot of outside-the-box things this year that I think has made the show more interesting to watch.
Yeah. Exactly. And there's usually, as of late, there's like connecting story arcs throughout the show.
Yeah. And it's made it more entertaining. And then, so then he comes out and he basically kills them all. He just chucks them all down the ramp. There's a bit where like the Miz is crawling to the back and he just does not allow him. And then he gives Curtis Axel a power slam. People chat one more time, he does another one, and then he picks him up for a fourth one, and as he's picking him up for a fourth one, Booker T goes, here comes Power Slam number 5! You're like, for fuck's sake, Booker T.
Well, I mean, you know, that's your mayor. He can't count, but, you know, he can shucky, and he can ducky. Quack, quack. Yeah, you would vote for him, wouldn't you?
Jesus Christ.
Okay. Here's a better one. Between Booker T and Kane, who would you vote for?
Oh, Kane in a heartbeat. I will be your mayor because I will not let my brother set me on fire. I will fight back. I will not let someone have a parody of me having sex with a mannequin. I will fight back. I will set Oklahomans on fire if I need to. I'd have him just go full character. I recognize my problems. I've been in anger management before. I just go full pelt.
Yeah.
Kane all the way. Kane all the way. And in the end, Strowman ends up power slamming Curtis Axel through the commentary table, and Braun stands tall at the end, and I just thought, Braun Strowman is officially my favourite wrestler. Like, he is my favourite, he's my utter favourite, because whatever he does, he just makes me smile, and I just love him. I love him.
So much. The best. So unusual.
He has overtaken Rusev, and that was, like, an impossible task. Impossible.
Yeah.
Okay, where is your rating for this week's show? Out of 10 is the score that we do here. on the Raw Rundown. What are you feeling this week, Mr. McClutch?
I was not head over heels about the episode like you were, but there were a lot of really fun spots. There was a lot of dead weight, too, though. I think I would give this an even 7, Kenny. It was a above-average episode with some really entertaining stuff thrown in.
That's fair. I'm going to give it an 8 because Braun.
Yeah.
And I can't remember the last time I saw such terrible phone acting that Daniel Bryan had. So we got a Daniel Bryan bump, we got a Braun out of a garbage truck, we got all this shit. Drew Gulak doing soft. It was tremendous. So
good stuff.
Big fan. David, where can people find you on Twitter if they want to get in touch?
Hit me up over at Zoopsul, ZOOPSOUL. Be sure to watch that video of me and Kenny meeting over on Kenny's Twitter, which is
KennyMC1985. You can follow us at Inside_the Ropes and get your tickets for Kevin Nash, Scott Hall, Shawn Michaels, whoever you want to come see at InsideTheRopes.co.uk. Also, head over to Patreon, guys. Patreon.com/InsideTheRopes, where you can get all manner of extra content. That's where we cover pay-per-views. That's where we cover retro pay-per-view reviews. David and I just did the banter cast, which is, I think, almost 2 hours of us just talking absolute shite. So that's on there. So we hope you have a good week. David and I will be back soon. And David, what song is going to play us out this week?
Oh boy, goodness gracious. You know, it has been a Braun theme with this one because he was the standout star for this. So, you know, I think it's going to have to be Mr. Braun Strowman.
Brawny baby, he is the best. Ladies and gentlemen, here is the music of Braun Strowman. We will see you next week. Thank you for listening. And just remember, be nice to somebody that you don't even know. Is that the thing you say? Be nice
to Strowman. That is.
Blah, 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 blah.
That is. Be nice to people that you don't know, but be a dick to people that you do. That's my philosophy with Kenny.
He's not lying.